Okay, we're talking about the Sabbath rest. Okay, and last week we were discussing some of the things concerning the Sabbath and a lot of misunderstandings that people have today about what the Sabbath is really all about. And we were discussing the fact that the Sabbath law was given to the Israelites. It was only given to the Israelites there at Mount Sinai, and the fact that it never applied to anybody else. And it was, and we saw that the Apostle Paul talking about the fact that the law, which also includes the Sabbath laws, was taken out of the way and nailed to the cross. So it doesn't even apply to the Israelites today. Okay? So it certainly does not apply to Christians. It never applied to Gentiles, never applied to Christians at all. But I had some questions after last week's discussion about the Sabbath, and so I thought that before we continue in looking at what the writer of Hebrews says, I thought we'd look at a few other things that the Bible says about the Sabbath itself, just so that we have a proper understanding of what, you know, what was the Sabbath really all about, because I think that that will help us in understanding more of what the writer of Hebrews is saying concerning the Sabbath rest that we have in store for us. All right? So let's look at a couple of several Old Testament passages that have to do with the Sabbath and Sabbath laws. You see, the Sabbath was not just simply a day where nobody was supposed to do anything. Okay? There's a distinction between doing work, okay, versus doing what is necessary to honor God on the Sabbath, or, as the Scriptures say, to keep the Sabbath holy, okay? The Sabbath was to be a day that was holy to the Lord. Turn over to Exodus chapter 23. We're going to begin there. Now, in Exodus chapter 20, where it gives us the Ten Commandments, is where we first read of the Sabbath day. Okay? But in Exodus chapter 23, beginning in verse 10, we have a section here that talks about Sabbath laws. All right? Now, if you go back over to chapter 20, verse 8, it says, "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. Neither you, nor your son or daughter, not your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor your alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." So a couple of things that we see just in that part is that, again, There is a cessation from work, okay? And that's what, when it says, and we talked about this last week, when it says the Lord rested on the seventh day, it, again, doesn't mean that God was tired after all this work of the creation. God doesn't get tired, okay? It means he rested, he ceased from the work that he was doing. And thus, the part of the Sabbath that says to cease from your work. Notice that it's 6 days you shall labor, okay? And on the seventh day, you cease from your labor. Now, go over to chapter 23, beginning in verse 10. Now, again, the emphasis here is to understand that, and this, I think, is one of the things that a lot of people today, Seventh-day Adventists and those who insist that we are still to be worshiping on the seventh day or the Sabbath, that they don't understand. There's a whole lot more involved in the Sabbath laws than just simply resting on the Sabbath. Okay? So, for instance, in chapter 23, notice here that it says, for 6 years you are to sow your fields and harvest the crops, but during the seventh year let the land lie unplowed and unused. Then the poor among your people may get food from it, and the wild animals may eat what they leave. Do the same thing with your vineyard and your olive grove. 6 days do your work, but on the seventh day do not work, so that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the slave born in your household and the alien as well may be refreshed. Be careful to do everything I have said to you. Do not invoke the names of other gods. Do not let them be heard on your lips. So here we have not just the seventh day rest, but now we're seeing that within that law and regulations is 6 years you work the land, but then you give the land rest. Okay, so it carries over to more than just simply, you know, the 1 week period. All right, go to chapter 31. Exodus 31. And beginning in verse 12. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, you must observe my Sabbaths. This will be a sign between me and you for the generations to come, so you may know that I am the Lord who makes you holy. Observe the Sabbath, because it is holy to you. Anyone who desecrates it must be put to death. Whoever does any work on that day must be cut off from his people. For 6 days work is to be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath must be put to death. The Israelites are to observe the Sabbath, celebrating it for the generations to come as a lasting covenant. It will be a sign between me and the Israelites forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he abstained from work and rested." All right, so there's another interesting part of this that we see in this passage where he talks about it being a celebration. Okay? The Sabbath was to be a celebration to the Lord. So one of the things that we need to understand from this is, When the Bible, those instructions say on the 6 days you work and on the seventh day you rested, well, what does that really mean? Were the Israelites just supposed to sit down and not move, not do anything at all? Well, if that's the case, how were they supposed to celebrate the Sabbath? And what all does that involve? Okay? Turn over to Leviticus chapter 25. Now, here we find some instructions that have to do with not just, again, the Sabbath day, but the Sabbath year, okay, and even beyond that, what is referred to as the year of Jubilee. All right, so look at what he says here, beginning in verse 2. "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, when you enter the land I'm going to give you, the land itself must observe a Sabbath to the Lord." Okay? So here, the land is observing a Sabbath, okay? Not just the people, but the land itself, all right? And look at what he says here. "For 6 years, sow your fields, and for 6 years, prune your vineyards and gather their crops. But in the seventh year, the land is to have a Sabbath rest." There it is again, okay? "A Sabbath to the Lord. Do not sow your fields or prune your vineyards. Do not reap what grows of itself, or harvest the grapes of your untended vines. The land is to have a year of rest. Whatever the land yields during the Sabbath year will be food for you, for yourself or your maidservant, your manservant, and the hired worker and the temporary resident who have lived among you, as well as for your livestock and the wild animals in your land. Whatever the land produces may be eaten. So here again, the idea is the land is going to continue to produce crops, but they were not allowed to do what concerning the land? They weren't allowed to work it. Okay? They could take the food that it produced, but they could not work the land. In other words, when you're talking about working land, whether you're talking about vineyards or in order to prepare for the next crop, what do you have to do? You got to plow, you got to prune, you got to do all these things in order to have to make sure that you get this harvest, but you prepare for the next harvest. All right? And what this part of the Sabbath laws was, don't do that. Okay? You can eat of whatever the land produces, but you cannot work the land. Okay? The land is going to, the land needs to rest. Okay? Now, let's continue on. Count off 7 Sabbaths of years, 7 times 7 years, so that the 7 Sabbaths of years amount to a period of 49 years. Then have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement, sound the trumpet throughout the land. Consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. Each one of you is to return to his family property and each to his own clan. The 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. Do not sow and do not reap what grows of itself or harvest the untended vines. For it is a jubilee and is to be holy for you. Eat only what is taken directly from the fields. In this year of jubilee, everyone is to return to his own property. If you sell land to one of your countrymen and buy any from him, do not take advantage of each other. You are to buy from your countrymen on the basis of the number of years since the jubilee. And he is to sell to you on the basis of the number of years left for harvesting crops. When the years are many, you are to increase the price. And when the years are few, you are to decrease the price. Look at this next part here, he says, because what he is really selling you is the number of crops. Okay? Not the land, but the number of crops. Look at what he says here. Do not take advantage of each other, but fear your God. I am the Lord your God. Follow my decrees and be careful to obey my laws, and you will live safely in the land. Then the land will yield its fruit, and you will eat your fill and live there in safety. Look at verse 20. You may ask, what will we eat in the 7th year if we do not plant or harvest our crops? Reasonable question, right? Okay. I will send you such a blessing in the 6th year that the land will yield enough for 3 years. While you plant during the 8th year, you will eat from the old crop and will continue to eat from it until the harvest of the 9th year comes in. Okay? You understand what he's saying here? It's this very similar to, remember when the Israelites were in the wilderness and they were receiving manna from heaven? Remember what the instructions were in terms of them gathering the manna?
And gather every morning except for the 7th.
Except on the 7th. But if they gathered more than what they needed on any of those days,
then it would spoil. Okay? Because God wanted them to take only what they needed for themselves, for their family. But on the sixth day, they were to do what?
Double it.
They were to double it. They were to gather twice as much as they would otherwise, so that they didn't have to gather it on the Sabbath. But that they gathered on the sixth day did not spoil. You see, what was left over. So here, God is applying that very same principle, not just to the people, but now to the land. Okay? And so he's telling them, all right, follow these laws, these decrees, and what's going to happen if you do? You're going to be blessed. And their concern is, okay, well, but wait a minute, if we don't plant, how are we going to get a crop? You say, which is, again, a reasonable question, right? You got to plant in order to get a crop. And God's saying, just follow my decrees, and you won't have to worry about that. So from these things thus far, what's one of the most important things that we can deduce from these Sabbath laws and what they are really all about?
Well, to me, it looks like it's for the land or for humanity itself, there is a point that we need to refresh.
Okay.
And when we as people, well, I'm assuming, but on the Sabbath, you focus on the gift that God has given you.
Okay.
And the blessings He has given to you.
Okay. That is going to follow into what the writer tells us in Hebrews about the Sabbath rest and what its real meaning for us is today. Mm-hmm. Okay? One of the most important elements of this is the issue of faith.
Yep.
Okay? In other words, do the Israelites have enough faith that they trust in God to provide for them, okay, when they're not doing the work, right, that God is going to give them what they need? Do you have enough faith to do that? Okay? Brian and then Wes over here.
Some of the key factors I think we look at is, go back to Exodus 23, he said, be careful to do everything I say to you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because God knows us well enough to know if we're busy 7 days a week, we are not going to take the time to worship.
Exactly.
Exactly.
We're going to give credit to ourselves because we think it's our work that is complete.
Yep.
But by following what he says, we realize where every key blessing comes from.
Right.
Everything comes from him.
Exactly.
If we get busy doing our day-to-day lives, we're not going to take the time to worship.
Exactly.
And that's what the Sabbath was for them, to make sure they put a time to worship God and thank God for everything that they had.
Honor God and keep that day holy. Okay, Wesley?
I was just going to say what you had said, that the thing was he had to trust the Lord, mm-hmm. trust in the Lord,
right,
that he was going to take care of him. And you're doing that, you're showing that by following his word and trusting in him, he will provide everything that you need.
Exactly. Okay?
I was just going to say, and I don't know if it's still happening today, but when, as a child, I always worked with the farmers at home, especially in the fall and the spring. And I noticed that fields, in the seventh year, they got left there. They would not use those fields.
Right.
They weren't plowed. Nothing was done to it. And then when they did use it again, the soil had so refreshed itself.
Exactly.
The nutrients in the soil were back where they needed to be.
Right.
And the next crop would be
that much better, right?
Yeah.
And science, by the way, has proven that to be true. Okay? If you talk to those who are in that industry of farming and so forth, they will tell you there's one thing that's called rotation of crops, where you don't plant the same thing in the field every year after year, because doing that will deplete the nutrients out of the soil. And so you rotate your crops around, and part of that is giving, you know, different fields a period of rest where you don't plant anything there.
Yeah.
You see? So again, what God has put in here, science has proven to be true.
Yeah.
You see? Now, here's one of the things about this. We look at this this year of Jubilee and this rest and trusting in God and so forth, we go to, and we'll talk more about this in detail a little bit later as we get to it, but you go to what the writer of Hebrews is telling us about us having a rest, us resting, okay, having a Sabbath rest, at least in part. And I want you, I'm just going to throw this out there for you to think about. I want you to just kind of let this simmer in your mind for a while. When we get to it a little bit later, then we can talk about it some more. But part of this, again, it's all about trusting God, right? That God is going to take care of us. Well, one of the biggest problems that so many people have today is trying to work in order to be saved. Okay? That we're trying to do all this work and everything in order to save ourselves. Well, the reality is we can't save ourselves. And part of, at least part of what this Sabbath rest for us is, okay, again, what is the word rest really all about? To do what? To finish or to cease from working. So the idea, at least in part, that the writer of Hebrews wants us to understand is cease. Stop trying to save yourself. And learn to trust in God. Rest in God's salvation.
That's right.
Okay? Cease from trying to do it on your own. And learn to trust and rest, find rest in God's salvation. All right? So when we take this, what he's saying here about this year of Jubilee and so forth, it's easy to see how that really applies to us, because part of this Sabbath rest and this year of Jubilee, the 49 years and so forth, is all about learning to trust God. That He is going to provide what we need. And for us, it's not as much about crops and those kinds of things as it is about just trusting that God is going to provide, okay, salvation for us. Brian, did you have a comment?
Yeah, just looking back at God's plan, if you really see the whole perspective of it even today. I grew up in a time frame where most things were closed on Sunday.
Yep. Okay, right.
And so that made us spend time with our family. And that created a better family environment.
Right.
Now that we're, if you look at today's time and age, we're so busy, we forget about all that stuff. We wonder why the world's going the way it's going.
Yeah.
God's plan had it where it was perfect for not only the crops, but for us spiritually, family-wise. If we would listen and pay attention like He told us back then, He has a better plan all the way across.
Yeah.
And look at the times back then, growing up, but I can remember, and I'm so blessed I was raised during that period, to see where it's at now, see the struggles families have, and all the stuff that goes along with it.
Right.
We're getting to further and further away from
further God. Away from God, yeah, yeah. Those laws, by the way, were referred to as what? Anybody remember?
Blue laws.
Okay? And it started out, you know, where no stores could be open on Sundays, except for various essential things, okay? And then after a while, they opened up, you know, general stores, but you couldn't buy alcohol or tobacco on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, now, you know, they've gotten rid of all those laws. You can buy anything, do anything, whatever, because as Brian pointed out, we just really put God aside.
Yeah.
I can remember growing up, my dad, of course, we were raised Catholic. We went to church every Sunday, you know. But we were not allowed to do any work on the seventh day, on Sunday, you see. For him, that was the seventh. I can remember times when, you know, it's like, wash the car. Nope, you can't wash the car. Can't cut the grass. You got to do all that before Sunday, because on Sunday you're not allowed to do any of that kind of stuff, you see. So that was, growing up, that was the thought, that was the mentality that a lot of people had, even though for us, it was Sunday, not the Sabbath, but that's how they looked at it.
but you know, I try to remind people, or when I talk to somebody about God's laws, that when you look at it, and especially when they refer to the Ten Commandments, every law that God has given to us was for our benefit,
right,
not for God.
Right.
And if we could just follow that, how wonderful this world
would be. Oh, yeah, yeah, it'd be a whole different world, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Okay, turn over to 2 Chronicles chapter 2. Now, this is the account of Solomon making preparations for building the temple. All right? And notice something that it says here. Beginning in verse 3, "Send me cedar logs as you did for my father David when you sent him cedar to build a palace to live in. Now I'm about to build a temple for the name of the Lord my God and to dedicate it to him for burning fragrant incense before him, for setting out the consecrated bread regularly, and for making burnt offerings every morning and evening, and on Sabbaths and new moons, and at the appointed feasts of the Lord our God." So here we get an indication, at least by Solomon's time, because I can't find any other references, not that they're not there, I just haven't found them, where specifically it mentions the idea of making burnt offerings on the Sabbath. Okay? Now, burnt offerings were done in accordance to what? They were part of the worship to God, were they not?
Yeah. Right.
Okay? And Solomon here is saying that the, you know, the building this temple so that these offerings can be made on the Sabbaths and new moons and other festivals. So, what is that telling us? Again, go back to the idea of the Sabbath rest in terms of what were they doing on the Sabbath? Was everybody just kind of sitting around, you know, in their house, twiddling their thumbs? Or were there other things to be done? And what about this idea of, wait a minute, if they're having to offer sacrifices on the Sabbath, wouldn't that entail work? I mean, somebody's got to, you know, cut up the bulls or the lambs or rams, and, you know, somebody's got to put the fire together, and wouldn't that be work? But yet they're doing this on the Sabbath, so what about that? How do we reconcile that? What's going on here? Okay?
To me, it would be a labor of love by worshiping God.
Okay.
It's something done for God himself.
Okay.
Instead of what it would benefit us.
Okay, exactly. When it talks about the work, okay, don't do any work on the Sabbath. Again, go back to some of these references we've had. That work is in reference to harvesting crops and doing those kinds of things for you to be able to live on and make a profit and so forth, okay? What we might refer to as our job, okay? Right? Which is different from those who were offering these sacrifices, okay? That is bringing glory and honor to God. They're not doing that as a job for profit and so forth. Does that make sense? Okay. So it may be labor intensive, okay, to carve up a bull and, you know, and put it on the thing, but it's not work in the sense that it is producing something for you. All right? It is, as Judy said, it's a labor of love that you're doing in honor of God, to honor Him and to keep that day holy. Wes?
I think a good way to say it, a good way of saying it also, Russ, is saying it's not earning a living.
Right.
What we consider today earning a living because, as you said, we're making profit for ourselves. But if you come, say you was to come to church and you couldn't communicate together, that's work.
Right.
But that's work for the Lord.
Right.
You know, and in other denominations, they are doing other things in preparation for a service.
Right.
Which is work for the Lord. But if you're going to go to work to make a living, to get money in your pocket to benefit you, then that's not
right.
That's not considered the same
right.
thing.
Exactly. Because it's different than the idea of working for sustaining yourself, okay, for your employment, so to speak. Now, the only problem I have with that is, what's that say about me? I work every Sunday.
You're working now, for the Lord.
Do
I? I'm working
for the Lord, right. But again, one of the keys here that I want you to understand from all of this is to make sure that you get away from, if this is what you've been thinking of, this idea of a rest where the Israelites were just sitting around doing nothing all day long because it was a day of rest. That is not the idea of the Sabbath day, keeping it holy. It was to be a day where they were to cease from their work of harvesting crops and all of those kinds of things to make a profit and to earn a living, and they were to honor God in whatever that form was to be. I saw a hand up a moment ago. Brian, go ahead. Turn over to Ezekiel chapter 20 while Brian is talking here a moment.
Jesus is the perfect example, because that's what they got on him for healing on the Sabbath. So he was taking care of God's work,
right.
Father's work.
Right.
And that's what his whole point to them. He says, this is me serving the Lord.
Yeah.
Or my Father.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, Ezekiel chapter 20. And let's see, we're going to go to verse 11 and 12 here. He says, I gave them, that is the Israelites, my decrees and made known to them my laws, for the man who obeys them will live by them. Look at verse 12. Also, I gave them my Sabbaths as a sign between us, so they would know that I, the Lord, made them holy. Okay? So here, again, this is another indication. What was part of the purpose of the Sabbath? It's about this relationship between the Israelites and God. All right? That He had separated them from everybody else, and that He had a very special relationship. And again, this is a part that goes back and emphasizes what we talked about last week, and I mentioned again as we started this morning, that the Sabbath laws never applied to anybody else except the Israelites. Why? Because nobody else had that special relationship with God. You see? And the Sabbath laws were a part of reaffirming and confirming that relationship that He had. Okay? Look at chapter 23. Ezekiel 23. And we see here how the Israelites, and understand, Ezekiel is giving warnings to the Israelite people because of their disobedience to God. Okay? And look at, let's start in verse 36. The Lord said to me, Son of man, will you judge Aholah and Aholibah? Then confront them with their detestable practices, for they have committed adultery and blood is on their hands. They committed adultery with their idols. Okay? They even sacrificed their children, whom they bore to me as food for them. Mm-hmm. Look at verse 38. They have also done this to me. At the same time, they defiled my sanctuary and desecrated my Sabbaths. On the very day they sacrificed their children to their idols, they entered my sanctuary and desecrated it.
this is what they did in my house.
Yeah.
So here we look at God is talking about what they are doing, what their practices are, worshiping idols and even sacrificing their own children on the altar, okay? And he refers to that as what?
Adultery.
Okay? Which is unfaithfulness, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see? So Israel has been unfaithful in their relationship with God. And notice how he says, they're even doing this on the Sabbaths. That's how defiled they are. That's how broken the relationship that they have with God is. They're even doing this on the Sabbath. You see.
You know, Russ?
Yes.
You can relate it really to a marriage. A marriage couple has to get away and spend time with each other in order to sustain the relationship. God has set away a day that He wants for us to draw close to Him and spend that time to make that relationship work and sustain that relationship.
Yeah.
And these people have to follow that. They have just... That's like somebody being unfaithful and then coming back and acting like everything is hunky-dory.
Yeah, and he looks at it and says, this is adultery that you're committing against me. Okay? Go over to chapter 45 of Ezekiel. Just one last place that I want us to look at. Now, understand that this is during the time period of the kings and so forth, and there, you know, Israel has apostatized in so many ways in following God. Look at these instructions that he's given here concerning their offerings and keeping the days that are to be holy in doing that. At the beginning of verse 13, he says, "This is the special gift you are to offer. A sixth of an ephah from each homer of wheat, and a sixth of an ephah from each homer of barley. The prescribed portion of oil, measured by the bath, is a tenth of a bath from each core." All right, which consists of 10 baths or one homer, for 10 baths are equivalent to a homer. Also, one sheep is to be taken from every flock of 200 from the well-watered pastures of Israel. These will be used for the grain offering, burnt offerings, and fellowship offerings to make atonement for the people, declares the Sovereign Lord. All the people of the land will participate in this special gift for the use of the prince in Israel. It will be the duty of the prince to provide the burnt offerings, grain offerings, and drink offerings at the festivals, the new moons, and the Sabbaths, at all the appointed feasts of the house of Israel. He will provide the sin offering, grain offering, burnt offering, fellowship offerings to make atonement for the house of Israel. Notice again the mention there. Amongst all of these sacrifices that will be done on these includes the Sabbath. Okay? So again, we know that at least during this time that the Sabbath, the idea of keeping the Sabbath holy to the Lord involved some kind of worship and sacrifices and offerings and things of that nature. Okay? Now, if we move to the period of history that is referred to as the intertestamental period or the time between the testaments, that is what we have recorded in the Bible, the end of the Old Testament to the beginning of the New Testament is a period of about 400 years. All right, where we don't have anything in the Bible about what was going on there, okay? But what we do know from historical accounts, historians writing about things that were going on there, this is a time period where a couple of really significant things were happening religiously amongst the Israelite people. This is the time period, for instance, that we start seeing the Pharisees, that group of that religious people, they begin to develop and form. The Sadducees and so forth, all right? And one of the other things that began happening during this period is a lot of the traditions that were that came about were that that the Israelites were supposed to be following. In other words, they became a lot of the laws, okay? They really were the traditions of the elders, of the rabbis, the Sadducees, the Pharisees. That, and so by the time that Jesus came along, we begin reading in the gospel accounts, as Brian mentioned a little while ago, okay, what we see is Jesus oftentimes getting into confrontations with the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the teachers of the law, okay, over the traditions concerning the keeping of the Sabbath. All right? Another thing that really developed during this time is, and we read about this in the New Testament, we don't read about it in the Old Testament, is synagogue worship. Okay? So the Israelites were now, by the time Jesus comes along, they're worshiping on the Sabbath in synagogues, which were basically local churches. Okay? In our, you know, the way we look at it today. And so we saw that Jesus, the Gospels tell us, went into the synagogue on the Sabbath, which was his custom. All right? So, so Jews in Jesus' day were accustomed to gathering on the Sabbath in the synagogue and having a time of worship. All right? But they also, because of the traditions that they had come up with during this 400-year period, all right, had a lot of rules about what you could or couldn't do on the Sabbath. All right? And so they... And basically what they had done was they took this idea of no work to an extreme. All right? And that's why on one occasion the Pharisees got into an argument with Jesus about why as they're walking through the grain fields, his disciples are plucking grain and eating it with unwashed hands, and they're doing that when?
On the Sabbath.
On the Sabbath, which is what? Unlawful for you to do, you see? Which again, what we've seen in this is it wasn't that they weren't allowed to work to be able to eat. That was never a part of the Sabbath regulations, you see? So walking through a field and plucking grain and eating it was not, by God, under the Sabbath laws, considered to be work. They weren't violating anything.
No.
You say? Nor was healing someone on the Sabbath, which Jesus several times ran into, again, confrontations. There are 6 days to do work. Heal on those days, not on the Sabbath. Well, what about that? You say? Jesus' response to that was what?
If you had an ox... That's
yeah, how many of you you get it out, right? You see? And not only that, but what about the Sabbath? The Sabbath was made for what?
For the Lord and for us.
For man, not man for the Sabbath. In other words, the Sabbath was designed to benefit men. And so if healing someone... That would be a benefit to that person. There's nothing wrong with doing that on the Sabbath. You say, Ray, did you have your hand up a moment ago?
No, I just want to say that God is blessed.
Right.
So he can do whatever he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And healing someone, even bringing someone back from the dead, that was a part of his ability.
Right.
To do, because he could do it. He was God.
Right.
In the flesh.
Yes.
Many of them did not understand that.
Right.
That's why he had so many problems with the Pharisees. Right. And the Sadducees, because they just didn't want, they always wanted to, they really wanted to try to bully
Jesus.
Right.
Well, he wouldn't allow it.
Right. And part of it was that what Jesus was doing in these confrontations was trying to show them that they had all these traditions and rules that they had concerning the Sabbath were totally misguided, you see, and trying to correct their thinking concerning those laws. So anyway, we're way over time here. I appreciate your time with this. I hope this has been helpful to you in just kind of getting some broader understanding of what the Sabbath idea of what these rules and laws and all were really all about.
Yeah.
Okay? And now next week we'll go back over to Hebrews and we'll look at what the writer talks about of us entering into this Sabbath rest. And what is that really all about? So I encourage you to spend some time looking at that. All right? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.